When it comes to investing, retirement, taxes, healthcare, and estate planning, the decisions you make today can greatly affect the quality of life for you and your loved ones tomorrow. What you need is straight and unbiased information on the most important issues you'll face when planning for your retirement and financial future. Good news! You found the Retirement Blueprint with Grant Dorhout. Grant is the founder of Dorhout Retirement Services, and he's been guiding people financially and into retirement for nearly 20 years. So get ready for an hour of the most comprehensive financial information on the radio. It's time for the Retirement Blueprint. And now, here are your hosts, Grant Dorhout and Jeff Shea.
Good morning and welcome to the Retirement Blueprint, the show that gives you the straight talk and honest answers you need to reach your wealth management and retirement goals through smart investing and careful planning. On today's show, we're going to be talking about signs it could be time to look for a new financial advisor. Also, seven times you should not pay off a mortgage before retiring. Also, what is a deferred annuity and how is it used? And then finally, 10 things you should know about estate planning. My name is Jeff Shade, and as always, I'm just here to ask the questions. But of course, you know the words of wisdom and solid advice. They come from Grant Dorhout, founder and wealth advisor of Dorhout Retirement Services right here in Omaha. Hey, Grant, how you doing this fine spring weekend?
Excited to be here with you, Jeff. This first topic I have, this one's going to be a fun one. If someone has not listened to this show yet, they really need to tune in for about the next 15 minutes. This first topic is huge because you need to be thinking about these things. I encourage everyone, including my clients, to go through this list of things. If we are not providing these things or your advisor isn't providing them, you need to think twice before you move forward with them or stay with them.
Well, we've got certainly an information-packed show lined up for us today, Grant, but let's dive into our first topic here. You know, if you've been with your advisor for a while, you're thinking about making a change, we're going to be talking about five signs it's finally time to fire your financial advisor and a simple way to find a new one. So let's start, Grant, with, I think, one of the most important things, and that is whether or not they're a fiduciary.
Yeah, this is a huge one. And a lot of people don't know what that word really means. And it's very, very important that this is a part of what your investment advisor relationship is. Because if you have an advisor that's a limited scope, I know you've talked about that many times, there's a lot of limited scope advisors that, you know, maybe they have an insurance license, or if they have a, you know, maybe a Series 6 or a Series 7 where they can sell you certain mutual funds or certain stocks, or they can sell you certain annuities, variable annuities or fixed annuities, index annuities, all of these different things. They can sell all of these things to you based on what's called a suitability standard. And when you have a suitability standard, they basically just have to justify for a company that it's okay to take your money. And they admit basically that it doesn't necessarily have to be the right thing for you, but it is suitable. When you're operating as a fiduciary, as we do here at Dorhout Retirement Services, every single piece has to be in the best interest of the client. So I talk to people all the time when they come in and we talk about the money that they have and the planning that we're starting to do. We have five plans that we put together for everyone to have a complete plan. A couple that I met with yesterday just popped into my head. The goals about retiring in a year, and then the income that they need, what they have to have in order to make all of these things from a tax perspective work. All of these things have to work together for the better of the client, the best thing that is for that client. So I always think of it that, you know, we have all these different products and investments that we can put people in. We can put them in annuities or life insurance, or you could go in stocks, bonds, mutual funds, structured notes, certain things that you can do with trusts that you can shelter certain taxable consequences. All of these things, when I'm discussing things with people, I just kind of figuratively just kind of, okay, well, this doesn't work for what they need. This doesn't work for what they need. This particular type of investment account doesn't work for what they need. Okay, this annuity wouldn't work for what they need. And once you get through all of that, when you find out what they really are looking for and what they're really needing, you come up with this really nice package that we know is in the best interest of the client because it satisfies all of what they are wanting from their money.
And being a fiduciary, it's a legal obligation, but also with us here at Dorhout Retirement, it's also a moral obligation. So if you're working with an advisor who's not a fiduciary and they're constantly pushing investment products on you, they could be receiving a commission for selling those products. So if you're experiencing this, it could be time to find a new fiduciary advisor who has your best interest in mind. So that's number one. Grant, let's move on to number two now, which is they dismiss your input. It's their way or it's the highway.
Yeah, so I was talking to my wife about this last night, about this person that came in for their first appointment yesterday. And I told her, you know, she was asking how this appointment went and what we discussed. And this couple, they had an interesting story of how they got to where they were. And I was telling them how we go through the discovery phase. And then we sit down and we go through what type of planning we can do, showing them certain income and showing them tax ideas, and then looking at healthcare and how the investments just kind of fit right in. The investments basically reveal themselves as very simple to find. And it's not that hard to actually figure out how we invest people in the market once you do it that way. But the one thing that is absolutely not negotiable with me is annual reviews. So if you're saying that you want, like this couple yesterday, they had about $2.4 million in total investable assets that's going to be available in this next year. Well, this particular couple, they wanted to invest some of their own money. He enjoyed tinkering with stocks. He'd learned a lot and learned why he doesn't want to invest in a lot of penny stocks, and blue chips are what he wants to be in. And he enjoys working with this at that point. And she said to me, she said, "Hey, is this something where I have to give you all of our money, or can we have a certain portion that he can continue to do his own stocks?" And I said, "Okay, what I will do is I'll put together a plan for you. And I'll tell you exactly how much I absolutely have to have for my plan to work until age 100. And if there's an extra $500,000 that's discretionary, or four or three or two or six, it doesn't matter the number, I'll let you know that that's the portion that you can invest, and I can still make your plan work with what we have." And that was their input. I think that's very important to note that, hey, this is something specific for them. Not everyone wants to do that. That's okay. They want to. That's okay, but we can't let them say, "You know what, Grant, we have $2.4 million. We need to create this income, and you're going to invest $500,000 for us. We're going to invest $1.9 million, and your $500,000 is going to have to satisfy all of the needs and obligations that we have, and we get to play with $1.9 million." That doesn't work. But we can have a discussion about meeting in the middle. And I think that's important, that your concerns, if you are having real difficulty with the risk tolerance that you're in, or the investments and the movements that they're making, and your investment advisor just says, "Yeah, well, this is the way that we do it, and this is just the way that you have to be invested," that's a problem. You need to find a middle ground with investment performance and what makes you comfortable with your money.
So your financial advisor should not assume free rein over your investments. They should absolutely be responsive to your feedback. And Grant, if I'm hearing you correctly, certainly clients at Dorhout Retirement Services have the chance to say, "Grant, I don't necessarily agree with this. I don't want to do this," or explain it to me further.
Absolutely. You have to go into the detail. And if something is confusing, this is the importance of the annual review process and being in really good communication with your clients, is the fact that, okay, this is why we are where we are in this particular type of model, whether it's a moderate type of a investment or growth or aggressive, it doesn't matter which one it is. This is why we started this. This is why we've been in this in the last 6 or 8 or 12 months. Is everything the same with you in terms of your comfortability with investment, that you want to stay this course, or should we move this up or down? Should we pull back the reins a little bit or increase the growth potential? Those are huge things. It comes down to communication, which we're going to talk about next.
And Grant, I'm glad that you brought that up, because I don't think a financial advisor should be difficult to reach.
Yeah, they shouldn't. If you're calling your advisor, or if you're sending them an email, I have a new client that came to me from another advisor in town because they couldn't get their questions asked. I actually just thought of three new ones that we got because of this reason, that their advisor, it's become very frustrating. They just want answers to their questions. It's a simple thing. They send you an email, you respond to the email. Well, they're having trouble with that. Or, "Hey, you know what? I haven't seen you in a year and a half. Could we get together and go over my investments? I don't even know what's going on with my money." And they don't call them back. This is a huge issue. I get when people are on vacation. I've been on vacation in the last year, but when we've been gone, if Lisa's not in the office, if I see that there's a call into the office and it's a client of mine that's left a message, if they say something like that, you know, it's a simple phone call. "Hey, I'm on vacation for the next week. I'll be back in the office whenever I'm going to be back in the office. Can we give you a call then?" And then we put a note in the calendar to give them a call. If your advisor can't do that for you, this is a relationship that it goes both ways. You're trusting them with your financial well-being. They're trusting you with communication. At least that's the way I look at it, is, "Hey, I trust you to communicate with me so that I can make sure I'm not going to hurt you in any way. I can make sure that every single thing in your plan is going to work for your betterment." And we just have to talk. We just have to be in good communication about that. And if your advisor can't do that, I wouldn't stay very long. I know that.
We're talking with Grant Dorhout of Dorhout Retirement Services right here in Omaha, and we're talking about some signs that it may be time to move on from your current financial advisor. We've talked about not being a fiduciary, they dismiss your input, they're difficult to reach. The next one is they just don't give you the details. Grant, how do you handle the details at Dorhout Retirement Services?
Yeah, so Jeff, I just popped into my head. If you have something where, just trust me. Handed over $1 million. Just trust me. And they don't say it that simply, of course. They show you a little snippet. And if you ask a question, if they dance around it or they don't give you the detail as to why it's going to work, I think that's a really big red flag. You know, if I'm discussing a structured note, I'm thinking of this couple again that I just met with yesterday. We discussed certain growth structured notes or income structured notes and how it can follow certain indexes and what the time commitment is and exactly what a barrier is and how much it can protect people on the downside of the market, exactly where that barrier is breached and exactly what the consequence is and what the negative is. Okay, this is how this can go wrong. And then also, this is how this can go right for you in the next 2 or 3 or 5 years. Going through those details, as well as what the fee structure is specifically, exactly what that is and why, I think that's really, really important for people to feel comfortable with their investments. I want everyone out there to think, and I know this might sound like throwing stones, it's really not. This is just being truthful and honest. If your advisor can't explain the details to you, you have to wonder if they actually understand it themselves. If you cannot explain these things to a kindergartner in a simple way, you may not understand it yourself, and your advisor might be struggling with that if they're not going to give you the details.
Grant, the final reason that it may be time to move on from your current financial advisor is they don't take the time to get to know you. And I think this goes back to your point about the discovery process.
This one frustrates me to no end. If your financial advisor, and this again might sound like throwing stones, it's not. This is just the truth. If your financial advisor admits or says or thinks that they are working with so many people that they see you at Menards and they don't recognize you by your first name, they don't know you. That's something that I've structured my business very specifically, that I want to make sure that we maintain a relationship. I don't just want another number. That's me. There's a lot of guys out there that they are on the radio or on TV or whatever, and that's fine. There's no problem with marketing. We're doing the same thing, but I get continually frustrated when I've run into it where I'm going through a very diligent process, making sure that we are fulfilling our fiduciary responsibility. And it might take 2 or 3 or 4 appointments for people to feel comfortable to hand over the keys to the Ferrari, so to speak. Right. And then there's other financial advisors in the first or the second meeting. They think that they have enough information on these people that they're moving $1 million in an hour and a half of talking to these people. There's no possible way that they know enough about them. There just isn't. I'm sorry. There is no possible way. I don't care how good you think your process is. You don't know these people enough to be investing their money when you've met with them for 45 minutes or an hour and a half. You just have to take more time to make sure you don't miss something.
Grant, before we continue our conversation today, I want to take just a moment to talk to our listeners here. If you're not sure that you've got the right financial advisor, if you're not sure your advisor is a fiduciary, they dismiss your input, maybe they're hard to reach, they don't give you the details, maybe it is time to look for a new financial advisor. We invite you to give us a call here at Dorhout Retirement Services this weekend and set up a complimentary conversation with Grant to ask your questions and get the answers that you need to put you on a path towards a confident retirement. We call it the Dorhout Retirement Blueprint. And again, it is not going to cost you a dime. No cost and no obligation. You can make this call this weekend. Call 402-281-0750. Once again, that telephone number, 402-281-0750. It is the weekend, but go ahead, give that number a call. Leave your name and your telephone number. That's all you've got to do. Lisa will give you a call back during the week and set up an appointment for you to sit down with Grant and have that important conversation about your retirement journey. Once again, it's not going to cost you a dime, but it could be the most important phone call that you'll make all year. So go ahead, give us a call. We're waiting for it. 402-281-0750. You can also request your plan online and find out more about us at DorhoutRetirementServices.com. That's Dorhout, D-O-R-H-O-U-T, RetirementServices.com.
Want more strategies to support the quality of life you want for 30-plus years? Stick around. There's more Retirement Blueprint with Grant Dorhout in just a moment. You can't start a trip you've never taken without a plan. and you can't start your retirement journey without a comprehensive plan to get there safely. To request your no-cost, no-obligation Dorhout Retirement Roadmap, call 402-281-0750 or request it online at dorhoutretirementservices.com. Now, back to more of Retirement Blueprint with Grant Dorhout and Jeff Shade.
Thank you so much for making this a part of your weekend. You're listening to the Retirement Blueprint with Grant Dorhout. My name is Jeff Shade. Okay, Grant, this is one that we get occasionally here in the firm, and it is really a common question that people have, and that is whether or not I should pay off my mortgage in retirement. So we're going to give you 7 times that you should not pay off your mortgage before retiring, but we'll also talk about some of the times that you should pay off your mortgage. So number one, I think, is if you plan to sell your home, should you pay off that mortgage before you sell your home?
Now, I wouldn't say so. Why would we do that? If we're going to sell it in the next 3 or 4 or 6 months, I mean, depending on the interest rate, if the interest rate is exorbitant, yeah, then potentially. But no, why complicate things, get the mortgage paid off, and then just go ahead and sell it. Just go ahead and keep making your payments for the next few months. And then if you're going to sell it, then you'll get the proceeds from that anyway, if you're going to do something like downsizing or something like that. Now, if you plan to sell your home in 5 years, well, if you have a 7% interest rate right now and you're planning to sell it in 5 years, and let's say you have $200,000 on the mortgage, well, 7% a year on $200,000, it's very simple math. That's going to cost you tens of thousands of dollars. Then I would say, okay, yeah, if you got the money in the bank, if it's just sitting there in the checking account, or if it's sitting in a 4.5% or 5% high yield savings account and you're paying 7% on your mortgage, well, yeah, in that sense, if it's 5 years down the road that I plan to sell, then I would pay off the mortgage. But if it's a short term, now there's no real use. I would just go ahead and let the mortgage be paid off when you sell it in a few months.
Grant, if you have a mortgage on your home and you're planning to maybe move to another home, maybe you want to downsize, but you're going to keep your current home. And remember now, I said you've still got a mortgage. If you plan to rent out your home, do you think it's a good idea to pay off the mortgage before you rent it out? Or should you just go ahead and keep that mortgage and let your renters pay that mortgage?
Yes, that's a complicated answer to a relatively simple question. And what I would go through is I would go through a relatively complicated analysis, seeing, okay, how much rent can we get? Mm-hmm. For instance, if I have a home that has $200,000 on the mortgage and I'm paying $1,300 per month and I can rent it out for $1,800 a month, yeah, go ahead and let's keep the mortgage and let someone else pay off the house. Again, if you have just the $200,000 sitting in the checking account that can pay off the house and then you can just generate more retirement income from the rent, that's a possibility, but it's more complicated than just, you know, this is a one size fits all for this type of answer. But I would say if you have a high interest rate, if it's say 7%, which we've seen for the last, what, year and a half or so, mm-hmm. that we've seen in our mortgages, if we're having that high of interest rate, which has pushed our payment up to, you know, say $1,700-$1,800 per month, and we can't get that in rent, I would pay off the mortgage then or refinance it and get it into a lower payment in order to make sure that it cash flows. That's the big concern. You don't want to move to another home, right, rent out your home, and then let someone else pay off your mortgage, but you're going backwards on a monthly basis. You have to make sure those numbers fit inside of your retirement plan. I would say as a general rule, if you can get $1,800 a month for your rent, I would want your mortgage payment to be no more than $1,200. Okay, that's just a general rule that I would give someone, you know, 60, 65% of what your rent, you shouldn't have more than that as your payment. And that'll give you a little bit of cushion for some unexpected things, like if the water heater goes out, if you have furnace work or other things down the road that are going to come, you're going to have that money in the bank. And that'll help you with a generalization of $1,200 on an $1,800 rent. 60, 65% is okay.
And Grant, to your point about 7% being a high mortgage rate, I mean, I'm a little older than you, but historically, if you look back, 7% is a pretty average mortgage rate over the years. Mm-hmm. Back in the early 80s, people were standing in line, at least in Massachusetts where I was, and people were standing in line to get mortgage rates at 18%. It's just incredible. Yeah. So, you know, 3%, I think that those days are gone, at least for the time being. But 7% mm-hmm. historically is actually pretty, pretty common. We're talking about reasons that you may not want to pay off your mortgage. Next one is it's more important to repay debts with higher interest rates. And it's not uncommon these days to have credit cards 25 and 30%.
Yeah, if you're going into retirement and you have credit card debt, you have to get rid of that first. Your mortgage is definitely secondary compared to what the credit card debt is or those personal lines of credit that you might have. Any of those things, or even car loans. I would say, you know, looking at what those are, you know, 7-8% car loans. And here's why. If you look at tax law changes that we're probably going to see in the next few years, you know, our standard deduction is relatively high right now. So most people are not getting a tax benefit or a tax write-off from the mortgage interest that they're paying on their home at this point. That's not a guarantee that that's always going to be there. So I would say, of course, if I have a car loan that I'm never going to receive a tax benefit from that interest, or a credit card that I'm never going to receive a tax benefit from that interest, well, in the future, your home interest, it could create a tax benefit if we go back and we have a relatively low standard deduction and you might go back to itemizing on your taxes. Mm-hmm. That's a way that I would say, okay, pay off these other things because it's never going to help you. And the mortgage is going to be secondary to those things for sure.
Yeah, and if you look at what you're paying in interest on a credit card with 25%, I mean, it is absolutely staggering. So I would say that if you're going into retirement, really the only debt that you should have, and I think there's good debt and bad debt, the only debt really that could be considered good debt would be a mortgage. So consider that. Next one on the list is you're still saving for retirement. There may be another reason why you may not want to pay off your mortgage.
Yeah, absolutely. If you don't have enough money saved up, and this is where a financial advisor can help you do the calculation if they're well-versed in doing this, it's not that complicated figuring out how much we're going to have at retirement when you pull the trigger and how you're going to have to be allocated. Let's just take an easy number. If someone needs $1.2 million and they're at $800,000 and they have 5 years until retirement, well, if they have 8 years left on their mortgage, but they have cash in the bank to pay off the mortgage, well, no, I'm going to allocate that towards my retirement investments, because if I only have 8 years left on my mortgage, I'm retiring in 5 years. If I've figured out that, okay, I got enough at retirement with $1.2 million, I got to do some catch up, I'm putting that money to work for me much more in the investments than I am paying off the mortgage. So it just depends on where your numbers are. And it's not a very complicated formula. I mean, we run this for people all the time, just telling them, hey, you're 10 years from retirement. This is what we have to get to, and this is how you're going to get there. If you are in that situation and you're just behind, yeah, the mortgage is not that big of a deal to pay that off immediately. Just wait until it's the right time.
Another reason why you may not want to pay off your mortgage, Grant, is that you're low on cash reserves. And an example would be, let's say you have $70,000 left on your mortgage and you have $90,000. Well, if you pay off your mortgage, that only leaves you with $20,000. That would be a situation, yep, I would think, where you may want to keep that mortgage until you're able to build up more cash reserves.
Yeah, absolutely. You would, because you always have to have the emergency funds in place. And when you're looking at general rules, it depends on what your reliable income can be. For instance, let's say I have someone that has a relatively good short-term and long-term disability plans in place that they will kick in after 90 days. And that short-term disability plan will pay and take care of all of their bills come 90 days. Well, that particular person, if they have a $10,000 a month income need, I know that very simply, I need at least $30,000 that's sitting in their emergency funds. And I'm not worrying about the interest rate that you're earning on those dollars. I just had this conversation with a new client of mine. He had $46,000 in a 4.75% interest rate in a savings account. And he's asking me, well, hey, I know I'm not going to need this money for at least 6 months. Should I put this money to work in the market? And the answer is absolutely not. If you're telling me 6 months, keep getting your interest inside of the emergency fund, inside of the bank. But general rule of thumb, you got to have 3 to 6 months in cash reserves to plan for the unexpected. And that's really not negotiable. Like, you have to have these monies there, because one thing that I do know is that life is very unpredictable. And in the next 10 years, you will have a surprise that's thrown at you, whether it's your issue or one of your kids' issues or something that you want to be involved with at your church or a charity or a neighbor or grandkid. I mean, there's a whole host of things that we don't know what's going to happen. So I'm a big fan of having cash on hand and making sure that we have an abundance of it. So if someone's got a $10,000 a month need, we're looking most of the time at $30,000 to $60,000. And that is not lazy money, no matter what any other financial advisor says to try and get you to put that in the market. I'm saying that is not lazy money at all. That is for a purpose. That $30,000 to $60,000 is the emergency funds, and you should not take that money and pay off your mortgage. Absolutely not.
And people who pay off their mortgages early often end up with a lot of home equity, but they have no money in the bank. And that is a position which is not financially healthy. Reasons for not paying off your mortgage. We're talking with Grant Dorhout. Next one is you'd rather maximize income through investments.
Yeah, this one's pretty awesome. I bought a house back in 2020. I have a 2.375% interest rate on a 15-year mortgage. Well, if I have a 2.3% interest rate and I can make almost 5% just in a savings account, well, that makes absolutely no sense for me to pay off that mortgage. Because of what our situation is, you know, we get to itemize, well, that mortgage interest that I'm actually paying, that's that really, really low interest rate, it actually helps me with, from a taxation standpoint, I can definitely make more money elsewhere. And I have a much longer time horizon. I can say, you know what, I'm going to put this in the market. I know that over time, I'm going to make 8, 9, 10, 12% on this money. I'm not paying off 2%. That makes absolutely no sense at this point for me. Now, some people say, you know what, I just feel better if I just know this is all mine. That's a totally different scenario. I'm talking about financial and talking about the numbers. The numbers absolutely make zero sense. If you have a 2, 2.5, 3% interest rate on your mortgage, makes zero sense to pay it off when you can make what you can make in the market.
And Grant, the final reason that you may not want to pay off your mortgage is that you want to deduct mortgage interest.
Yeah, so you have to have a relatively robust amount of deductions in order to get there for this particular part. Okay, so for today, for the next couple years at least, right now in 2024, it's $29,200 is the standard deduction for married filing jointly. Well, most people aren't going to have that much in deductions, so they're going to use the standard deduction. If you have more than that, let's say you have $30,000, you know, then you lump your mortgage interest on top of that, it could make sense right now. I would say more likely, though, is it will impact you once the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, once that actually changes, it's scheduled to change in 2026, or scheduled to sunset, I should say. Once that happens, it could be a much bigger reality that you're going to want that mortgage interest to have a deduction for your itemization on your taxes, because a lot of people probably after 2026 are going to not be using the standard deduction. Again, all of this depends on your situation, but these are just simple little things that you may want to have that mortgage for in the future, for the deduction that you're going to get if you're not having more than $29,200 in itemized deductions today.
Okay, so those are the reasons that you would not want to pay off your mortgage. I think one of the reasons that you would want to pay off your mortgage, and Grant, I want you to weigh in on this, is that you just sleep better at night. It just makes sense from a mental standpoint to know that you own it.
Yeah, that's number one reason that I can have for people. If it just helps you have some peace of mind, if it helps you have some peace through retirement, just knowing, okay, no matter what happens, I know I have my home. There's nothing wrong with that. And from a financial planning standpoint, or from a retirement planning standpoint, as long as we're not going to put them in a really detrimental state by putting their money towards their mortgage. For instance, if they take all the cash that they have in the bank and put it toward the mortgage, we would never suggest that. But if it helps you sleep better at night and getting a little more aggressive there and putting less money into the market, although putting more money into the market or investing more may make more financial sense, if you can't sleep with that, it doesn't matter, right?
Right.
We have to have a quality of life with what we're doing with our money. And if it gives a greater quality of life by paying off the mortgage, I'm all for that, as long as it doesn't open up the door for a potential real problem.
And knowing that no one can take your house away, I mean, that is a very, very powerful emotional state. But remember this, if you don't pay your property taxes, they should still take your house away from you.
Yep. See,
even if you have a mortgage, you don't have a mortgage, so consider that. We've been talking with Grant Dorhout here at Dorhout Retirement Services. We've had a great program today. Remember, we're also a podcast. If you have questions, you'd like to sit down with Grant and talk about your individual journey towards a confident retirement, once again, we are offering a no-cost, no-obligation, no-judgment Dorhout Burhout Retirement Blueprint for you. 402-281-0750 is the number to call to get yours. It's 402-281-0750. Again, it's not going to cost you a dime, and there is no obligation whatsoever. It's just a chance for you to sit down with Grant, have a friendly conversation about your journey towards a confident retirement. Now, you can make that call this weekend. Do it right now. 402-281-0750. Why wouldn't you want to take advantage of this opportunity with no cost and no obligation whatsoever? 402-281-0750. Make it this weekend. Leave your name, your telephone number. Lisa will call you back in the next business day or two and set up an appointment with Grant for you to have that conversation. Again, 402-281-0750. You can also request your appointment online at DorhoutRetirementServices.com. That's D-O-R-H-O-U-T, RetirementServices.com.
Want more talk about sustaining your wealth and thriving in a retirement that could last 30 plus years? Stay tuned for more Retirement Blueprint with Grant Dorhout after this. Ready to climb a mountain of financial know-how? Good, because it's time for more Retirement Blueprint with your financial Sherpas, Grant Dorhout and Jeff Shea.
Thank you so much for including us in your weekend. You're listening to the Retirement Blueprint, of course, with Grant Dorhout. My name is Jeff Shade. We're here for you every week for your fiscal fitness and your financial education on the radio. We've had a very robust conversation today in our program, and we're going to continue these topics by talking about annuities. Now, a lot of people talk about annuities, and Grant, I want to get into the different types of annuities here and why people say that they hate all annuities. But in particular, I want to talk about something called a deferred annuity. So first of all, what is a deferred annuity?
Yeah, a lot of times when you say, some people say, I hate annuities. Actually, Ken Fisher is pretty famous for saying, I hate annuities and you should too. I think that that's really short-sighted, because every single product out there could have a purpose. But from a deferred annuity standpoint, you're thinking of it in two different ways. Number one, from a taxation standpoint. Give an example. If you have a five-year annuity, you put money into the five-year annuity. If it's a multi-year guarantee annuity, you put the money in there. If it's non-qualified, meaning non-IRA, you will not pay any taxes on that growth until you pull money out, okay? Now, you have to know that when you're deferring that income off of it, when you're deferring that growth, you are going to pay ordinary income taxes on that when you pull that out. So That's the first way that it's deferred. The second way that an annuity could be deferred is from an income standpoint. An annuity, what everyone out there has to know is that an annuity at its core, at its chassis, if you look at a vehicle, every one of them has a chassis. My pickup has a half-ton chassis. Mm-hmm. That's its core. That's what it's built on. What an annuity is built on is income. So you could put money into an annuity and then defer until a later date. You might get a certain benefit or roll up inside of an annuity that later on, if you defer it, then you start taking income in 1 or 2 or 3 or 5 or 10 years. And then it will, in your contract, it will give you how much it will pay you for what period of time, whether it be 10 years or for life, or for both. It might be for 10 years certain, and the rest of your life if your life goes longer than that. And if you pass away prior to the 10 years, it'll pay your beneficiaries up to the 10 years. All kinds of different ways that it can be done. But that's the two ways that I think people really need to think of the deferred. One from a taxation, and two from an income, because that's really what an annuity is for.
If I decide that I want a deferred annuity, and Grant, you and I have discussed this, and we have settled on the fact that it could be good for me, would I make a one-time payment for this deferred annuity, or do I make a series of payments over a period of years? How does it work?
Yeah, this has changed in my time in this industry. 20 years ago, these annuities, you could put money into it and you could put $100 a month into it, $200 a month into it, $300 a month into it. But there's certain restrictions that have happened in our industry that have created tightening on this. So most annuities, you can't do it ongoing. Most of them are one-time payments. A lot of them will allow you to continue payments for maybe 1 year or a year and a half. Some of them will go up to 2 or 3 years, but it's increasingly rare that someone that's younger can do a monthly deposit into it. That's really not what the majority of the industry is now. Most of the time, it's a one-time payment, and then you move forward with the contract.
Okay, so I give you a one-time payment. This is a deferred annuity. I'm looking for it to pay me out over a period of time, but it is deferred off into the future. How long is the deferral period typically?
Yeah, so that's a really good question, Jeff. We actually customize these. When we look at the annuity, for instance, I have one client that just popped into my head that she's 55. She wants to retire at 65. And we gave her a couple of different options that she can put a one-time deposit now. And there are certain guarantees inside of that annuity that it's going to have a certain amount of roll-up. And then in 10 years, when she wants to retire, what the income is, we already know what it's going to be then for the rest of her life. I also gave her the option that she could keep money in the market and then we could do this annuity later on, maybe 5 years down the road, and then we can fund it. So there's a whole host of ways that you can build them. It's really based on what the need is. So if someone needs income in 1 year, they could defer it for 1 year. If they need income in 3 years or five or 10, like the client I just talked about, then you can customize that and find what company fits that time frame and that age range the best. And you have to look at the taxation on these as well, of course, but you can change that with pretty much every company, deferral time frame.
Grant, what is the ideal age, would you say, to use a deferred annuity? And what I mean by that is, let's say that I'm your age, I'm 43 years of age, and I'm looking to get some payout here, you know, when I'm 63. Is a 20-year time frame, that would be too long for a deferred annuity?
Yeah, I wouldn't do that at all. I have no annuities, yet I have plenty of clients that have them because we're at different stages in our lives. Mm-hmm. I have certain bedrock or certain principal protection in my portfolio that's wildly different than a lot of people that come in here that are 60 years old because we're in a very different time of life. Now, when I'm 60 years old, will I be utilizing an annuity for certain parts of my portfolio because I'm eyeing a potential retirement? In all likelihood, yes. I would say if you are 50 years old or younger, I would not take out an annuity at this point because you have to look at if you have non-qualified dollars going into it, you're going to have ordinary income tax if you start taking income off of it, but you can't pull the money out until you're 59 and a half anyway. So I would say once you get to 55, that's kind of the sweet spot where you'll start looking at them for the majority of people, depending on what their deferral period is or what their income need is and when. So the majority of the time, the majority of our clients are 60 and older that have annuities because they are really close to retirement or they're in retirement and they have that income need. And again, that's really what the core or the chassis of this particular vehicle is to create income. So someone that's 43 or 48 or 50 or 52, they probably don't need to take income off of it. And there's restrictions on when they can do it anyway. So why would I do it then? You wouldn't.
Grant, there are different types of annuities that we talked about in the program before in terms of fixed annuities and variable annuities and immediate annuities. Does the same apply with deferred annuities? I mean, are there variable deferred annuities and fixed deferred annuities and fixed index deferred annuities?
Yeah, there is. Very simple, quick answer. Yes, there is. The detail is when you look at a variable deferred annuity or an indexed or a fixed, if you put non-qualified, meaning non-IRA dollars, that's not IRA designated, if it's just cash in the bank that you invest in it, they're all going to defer the tax until you take the money out. If you put IRA dollars into it, it's going to defer the tax anyway, no matter where you're at. But if you look at these annuities, it's going to defer it until you pull the money out. And then if you're deferring it, you're looking for income in all likelihood later on. You can do that with any one of these vehicles, the variable, the fixed, or the index. Now, I have great contention with utilization of a variable product because if I'm looking for certain bedrock inside of a portfolio, if I'm looking for principal protection, putting it into a variable annuity is problematic in my professional opinion because you're having market fluctuations inside of this product and you have one of the highest fee structures and cost structure overall. When you start combining the mortality and expense, the income rider, the death benefit, the admin, the management, the sub-account charges, the expense ratios in the sub-account, all of these different things, they start mounting up. I have a big problem with that because the payout rate is just lower than if you utilize other types of annuities like an indexed annuity. That's going to be more favorable in my opinion because it'll give you certain guarantees inside of that product that variable annuities can't. And when you compare them side by side, if you look at 5 years down the road, what the income can be on a variable versus a fixed indexed, you're almost always going to win with a fixed index annuity. And if I'm looking at annuity as income generation, I'm going to use the one that's the most efficient with the lowest cost and gives me the highest payout because, again, at its core, it's created for income.
Grant, retirement plans like a 401k or an IRA, they set a limit on how much you can save per year, contribution limits. Are there contribution limits with deferred annuities?
Most companies, yes, they have a $1 million limit. Some of them will go to $2 million that they will say, you know what, without further investigation or heightened review, they'll call it. They'll say up to $1 million, totally fine. But beyond $1 million, it needs a heightened review where they will accept additional dollars. Like if someone comes in and they want to transfer $5 million in IRAs into one specific annuity, yeah, you can't just do that. There's going to be additional review because when you go into these annuities, you're committing to a time frame and they have to make sure that it's suitable for you to do so when you put it in there. So yes, there are limitations on the top side, but there's also limitations on the low side. Most annuities, you're going to have to put at least $20,000 into them. That's kind of a common area. Some will go down to $5,000 or $10,000 that you can put in, and anything above that up to $1 million is okay. Different limitations, different company. It's just based on what they want to do.
So we talked about the benefits of a deferred annuity grant. I mean, it builds guaranteed future retirement income, investment flexibility, no contribution maximum. Also, there are extra rider benefits that you can put on these deferred annuities. But let's talk about some of the disadvantages of a deferred annuity. The first one I would think is poor liquidity. Is that the case?
It is, absolutely. The majority of these annuities, if you put money into it, if you put $100,000 or $1 million into it, it doesn't matter. The majority of them, you have to wait 1 year before you can pull any money out of the annuity. And at that point, the majority, again, this isn't all of them, but this is just a generalization for the public. The majority of them will allow you to take up to 10% per year out of the annuity. So you have to structure your retirement portfolio so you don't have everything in that. That would not be wise at all. You have to have other liquidity elsewhere, whether it be in the bank or stock market or anywhere else where you can access additional cash. If pulling 10% out of that annuity is not enough in an annual basis, but you have to ask yourself if you are pulling more than 10% from your portfolio, if your whole portfolio is $1 million and you need over $100,000 per year out of it, you need to really rethink your retirement goals and your retirement plans, because that retirement, whether it's in an annuity or in the stock market, it doesn't matter. It's not going to last. So those liquidity restrictions, some people will say that that's a negative. If you're structuring the retirement plan properly, then those liquidity restrictions are not going to be a big deal.
Grant, let's say that I bought this deferred annuity and I'm maybe not quite 59 and a half. You know, something's happened. I need to get my money back. Are there early withdrawal penalties or early withdrawal taxes that you would pay in this circumstance on a deferred annuity?
Yep. Good question. Yes, there is. You have to be mindful of that. This is where I make sure that I go through this with people that, hey, if you cash this out 3 years from now, if you commit to a 10-year time frame with that company, they're also making commitments in their investment portfolio, in their reserve portfolio that they have at that insurance company. They're making certain commitments to other investments so that they can generate certain guarantees or certain aspects of their portfolio that are needed for them to give you a guarantee inside of the annuity. So if you cash it out early and you break contract with them after 3 years, I make sure to show everyone, hey, that's probably going to charge you 7% if you cash it out early. But if you take 10%, that's the penalty-free withdrawal amount, then there's no harm, no foul, no big deal. And once you get to the end of the 10 years, then you can cash it out completely. So you have to be mindful of that. If someone says that you're getting into an annuity and it's completely liquid day one, there are very, very limited amounts of annuities out there that will actually be completely liquid from day one. And the guarantees inside of those are much more flexible. Okay. So they're not so guaranteed as the other ones that have restrictions. You're giving a trade-off. You're giving a commitment of time, but they're giving you a commitment of the solidarity of that contract, and you know what to expect from it. So it's a bit of a trade-off, but that's okay. If you do the retirement planning properly, this surrender charge should never be an issue. It really shouldn't. If it is ever an issue, your retirement planning was probably not complete.
We've been talking about deferred annuities with Grant Dorhout of Dorhout Retirement Services. And if you're listening to the program and you're asking yourself, I don't know whether or not a deferred annuity is right for me, I'd like to sit down and talk with Grant. Well, we're going to be offering you this no cost, no obligation chance to do just that. You can call 402-281-0750 this weekend. Do it today while you're thinking about it and schedule your appointment to sit down with Grant and have an honest and sincere discussion about annuities and whether or not they're right for you. Now, there is no cost for this complimentary consultation. There is no obligation, and certainly there is no judgment. We will meet you where you are. That telephone number, once again, 402-281-0750. Have that conversation about annuities. Find out the good, the bad, and the ugly. Again, 402-281-0750. Make that call this weekend. Leave your name, telephone number. Lisa will give you a call back in the next business day or two to set up your complimentary consultation. You can also request it online at DorhoutRetirementServices.com. That's DorHout RetirementServices.com.
Want more straight talk and honest answers about your wealth management and retirement journey? Stay with us. There's more Retirement Blueprint with Grant Dorhout here. We're back with more strategies for a successful retirement. This is the Retirement Blueprint. Once again, here's Grant Dorhout and Jeff Shea.
Happy spring, everybody. We hope you're enjoying the warmer temperatures, and we certainly appreciate you joining us here for the Retirement Blueprint each and every week right here on News Talk 1290 COIL. Once again, if you'd like to sit down with Grant, talk about your individual situation, your journey towards a confident retirement, you can do that by calling 402-281-0750. No cost, no obligation for this whatsoever. Once again, 402-281-0750. You can also request your Retirement Blueprint online at DorhoutRetirementServices.com. Okay, Grant, let's wrap it up today on today's show by talking about an estate plan. 10 things that you should know about estate planning. Number one is that an estate plan covers decisions in both life and death.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to be mindful of what this estate plan is going to do for you. You might have, you know, a certain medical power of attorney while you're still alive, and certain things that you want everyone to know your wishes are if you're incapacitated and you can't make that decision for yourself anymore. And not only that, I had this person yesterday, I know I've referenced them a couple of times, but these are very applicable to them, that they said that they had a child with a minor disability, and they wanted to make sure that this child was protected just in case something happened to them and they're no longer around. They wanted to make sure that she wasn't going to be taken advantage of. And then their other child, they said, well, that child is going to need serious spending limitations after we're gone. You can set things up inside of your estate to take care of it. Yes, while you're living, mainly from a medical standpoint, is what you're going to want to take care of. But then also when you're gone, if there's certain protections you want in place for those that are getting this money, you can do that when you set up the proper trusts and wills.
So your estate plan lays out what you want to happen to your property at death and who gets what and when. Do you want to leave anything to charity? Who's also going to be the executor in charge of paying your last debts and distributing your remaining assets? So basically, that's what an estate plan is. Next thing we want people to know about an estate plan is that for some people, you do need more than a will. What would be a situation in which you would need more than just a will?
You're not necessarily saying that someone needs a trust when you say this. A lot of people go directly to that, okay, well, what type of trust do I need? No, what we're saying there is you're going to want to have certain powers of attorney in place, one being a financial power of attorney. For instance, something happens to you and all of a sudden you have a brain injury or something like that, or you have a stroke and there's a certain period of time that you can't or shouldn't be making financial decisions solely. You're going to want to have a financial power of attorney in place so that they can manage your financial accounts, make sure that they're going to pay the bills. If you are alive and you're unable to, if you have a lengthy stay in the hospital or something like that. Another one that you're going to want to make sure that you, as you're aging, you have to have a healthcare power of attorney. Mm. If you have a healthcare directive that you want everyone to know about, you have to have this healthcare power of attorney that is going to be able to make that decision. For instance, if you are in the hospital and you're brain dead, or if there's something where your quality of life is no longer going to be there, they might be able to keep you alive on a ventilator, but you're not really living and you don't want that to be your reality. You can direct that inside of your healthcare power of attorney that, hey, if this is my reality, that I'm not going to have a quality of life anymore, take me off the ventilator. You can direct those things through your healthcare power of attorney.
So you need a financial power of attorney. Also, you need a health care power of attorney. There's also this thing called a POD or a pay on death at the bank that you can get very simply. So if you have separate accounts, if one spouse dies, the other spouse can get the money that's in that account. So that's a pay on death. There's also a TOD, which is a transfer on death. Now, I understand that if you have a will, Grant, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, that means that you're going to go to probate. And some people say if you go to probate, it's like filing a lawsuit against your kids. What's your opinion on that?
So yeah, everyone has to have a will, but the amount of things that you put inside of that will is debatable, okay? So if you have named beneficiaries inside of a life policy, or if you have a POD or a TOD on your other accounts that are non-qualified, if you have certain annuities that we just talked about that have named beneficiaries inside of that contract, they don't technically need to go through probate. I would limit the amount of things that you have that go through probate, and you can dictate that by how much you put inside of your will. So yes, you need a will, you may need a trust, you need a healthcare power of attorney and a financial power of attorney, but how much you put in that will, even if you don't have a trust, if you have a bunch of IRA dollars that are in annuities, or if you have all named beneficiaries inside of all these different accounts, you don't technically need to put it inside of your will to go through probate, as long as it's clearly stated that, hey, this money goes to my three kids, Evan, Hunter, and Haley. This money is going directly to them from XYZ Life Insurance Company. As long as it's clearly stated, then it doesn't technically need to go in your will.
Grant, if someone does not have an estate plan, a will, or a trust, who decides who gets your stuff?
This is a very scary one, Jeff. The government would actually decide for you. Each state has certain laws for what you do when someone dies. If they become incapacitated, if they don't have an estate plan, you actually lose the opportunity to make your voice heard. This is an issue that we have to address. There has to be, at bare minimum, you got to have a will. You have to have a will in place. And then I would say optional, but I would place high priority on the financial and the healthcare power of attorney. And then further estate planning comes when you start getting additional trusts involved. So if you're going to have an estate plan that you can rely on, don't just let the government decide, because it's not going to be in all likelihood what you want.
And Grant, let's say that I have designated beneficiaries on some retirement accounts, or I also have a will. If I have both of those things, which takes priority, the beneficiaries or the will?
The retirement accounts actually does. So if the retirement account has a named beneficiary, I just talked about this with the life insurance or with the annuity, for instance, that is going to go directly where you say it is. Even if you changed your will, you have to change your named beneficiary inside of that insurance policy. Otherwise, you could have issues.
Grant, is there a way possibly that I can control my assets or what happens to them after death?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's say the couple that's from yesterday, and we still have a lot of work to do for them, but I already started going through this process a little bit with them, saying, hey, if there's certain things that you're worried about with one child, then spending limitations, for instance, okay, if they get $1 million at age 22, that's going to hurt them. We want to make sure that this helps them and enriches them and is good for their life. But I don't feel comfortable about them getting that much money at age 22. So if it's $1 million, I'm going to set a spending limit of $50,000 per year for X amount of years, and then we can release the rest of the proceeds. Or their other child that they said that, hey, we're just concerned that this child might get taken advantage of. Well, you can place restrictions inside of a trust that says, okay, this particular activity is okay, and this particular activity is not, and this particular other activity is something that we have to have our successor trustee or a trustee that has to review it with them and sign off on it for them to be able to invest in certain things or spend their money in certain ways and protect them against what the biggest concern is for the people that have passed away. So you can definitely control how long these things pay out. Then the investment management inside of the trust is going to have to be clearly defined, who manages that and what it's supposed to do. But yes, you can control this money for the next 20 or 30 years.
We're talking with Grant Dorhout here at Dorhout Retirement Services, and we're talking about things that you should know about your estate plan. Next one, Grant, does having an estate plan necessarily speed up inheritances? And what I mean by that is that, you know, you go into probate, but probate could really take quite some time.
Yeah, depending on the amount of assets, probate can take forever. Like if you're dealing with land and everything, that can take a while. But if you have named beneficiaries inside of your insurance products, if you have TOD and PODs in place at the bank or in your investment accounts, all of those things, then if you layer in a revocable trust or an irrevocable trust that's very clearly stated that doesn't have to go through the probate process, it's going to speed up this transition for your beneficiaries greatly, because the probate system can just drag on for a few months if you're not prepared for it. I had one actually that they had land. She came to a workshop of mine about a year ago. We're still waiting because it just wasn't very clear inside of their estate plans. And it's just been dragging it out for the kids. And this can be avoided if you have things set out very clearly what your wishes are. I have another one that we're dealing with right now. It's a business that the mom still technically owns. The one son actually runs it. And if she passes away, she wants him to be able to run it. If the other son wants to run it, it's not his thing, then the business would be sold. So very complicated things that we have to work through with this trust work, but it's what the parents' will is. It's what they want for this, and that's what they feel is best. And ultimately, it's their asset, so they can determine that regardless of what the children say. And sometimes I can get a little sticky, but that's how you can have these things done and done quickly, even though there might be a little contention with those that you leave behind.
Grant, everyone is concerned about taxes. Can estate planning save on taxes for your heirs?
Yeah, Jeff, this is a good point. From a taxation standpoint, an estate tax is charged for very large estates. So in 2024, the federal exemption is $13.61 million per person, double that for a couple. But there are 17 states, as well as the District of Columbia, that actually charge some form of estate or inheritance tax with much lower limits. Certain ones, they're $1 million. Some of them, it's $2 million. So making sure that you have your estate plan in place can help with those additional taxes. And there's certain planning that you can do. I've done this in the past as well, where we set up a certain trust to actually pay these inheritance taxes. It makes things very, very seamless. And this is a situation where I've heard this for years. I come from a farming background. I've heard dirt rich and cash poor. Mm-hmm. Well, if it's someone that has 1,000 acres, but they only have $150,000 in cash, that's a situation where if you want your kids to carry on the family farm, you're going to have some of this stuff set in place, and you're going to have ways for them to pay that tax when you're gone. If we're going to leave them $150,000 and $20 million in land, that's a situation where you got to really do some serious planning, and the estate planning can really save, it can even save the family farm.
Now, Grant, we have two human children, but we also have pet children, and I'm talking about a dog here. We have a little dog. We love her dearly, and her name is Chloe Chanel, and she gets everything she wants. She's our constant companion. She does everything with me. She watches baseball games with me. I mean, she really is part of the family. If people listening to this program today have a beloved pet like that, and they're concerned, what's going to happen to this pet once they pass on? Can you do a pet trust?
Yeah, you can. And I like the way you're talking about Chloe. I have a dog that I didn't particularly want. My dog, when my wife and I got married, his name was Junior. Junior passed away. He had diabetes. Aww. And that was my dog. I didn't want another dog. But then my wife and kids convinced me to get Skye. Mm-hmm. And now Skye she's the best dog. And yes, we love her dearly. And if something would happen to us, yes, we would want someone that we would trust to be able to take that pet and treat it like it's their own, as part of their family, just like we would do with our kids. So you can actually set up a pet trust specifically to help the other person pay for certain pet food and, you know, vet bills, other needs, things that you have to account for. Like if that person doesn't necessarily want the pet, I mean, you want to be able to pay for it. So yes, you can set it up. It's a little thing. It's not very expensive to do that part. Just layer that in there that, hey, Skye will be taken care of by XYZ person, and this is what they're going to get out of this trust in order to be able to pay for that dog moving forward. So yes, you have to remember the pet. Don't forget about them.
Grant, running a little short of time on this particular segment of our program today, so I want to wrap it up by saying that if you have questions about your estate plan and you want to talk to Grant about that, certainly, we do welcome you in our office. Call 402-281-0750. Ask for your no cost, no obligation, no judgment retirement blueprint review. Once again, it's not going to cost you anything. 402-281-0750. You can also request it online at DoorHout Retirement Services.com. Grant, we're out of time for this week. I want to thank you for your time. But most importantly, I want to thank our great loyal listeners here in the Omaha area for joining us. For Grant Dorhout, I'm Jeff Shade. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again next week with another edition of the Retirement Blueprint right here on News Talk 1290 COIL.
The opinions voiced in the Retirement Blueprint with Grant Dorhout are for general information and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. Examples provided are hypothetical and for illustrative purposes only. No strategy assures success or protects against loss. Investing in an alternative investment may only be suitable for persons who are able to assume the risk of losing a portion or all of their entire investment. To determine what may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial, or tax advisor prior to investing. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. The performance of any index is not indicative of the performance of any investment and does not consider the effects of inflation and the fees and expenses associated with investing. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Jeff Shade and show guests are not affiliated with CWM LLC.